The next case is 08-1069, State of Ohio, XRL Northwestern Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council versus the Ottawa County Improvement Corporation. Mr. D'Angelo.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Joseph D'Angelo on behalf of the relators. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes. The issue in this case is one of first impression, and it is simply stated whether construction projects that are funded at least in part by public funds, coming from an institution supported in part by public funds, requires compliance with prevailing wage without regard to meeting the requirements of Section 3C as interpreted by this court in Episcopal Retirement Homes. If you look at the history of the prevailing wage statute, I think it's very clear that the answer to that question is yes. The 1931 statute only applied to the state and its political subdivisions. In defining what a public improvement is, that statute limited such construction to construction by the state. The 1935 amendments, as we've seen in other contexts, saw an expansion of prevailing wage applicability from its original enactment, and one of those expansions included the amendment of Section 3, present day. Back then it was General Code Section 17.3. How they went about amending is critical to understanding what the legislature's intent was, because they created a second classification of public authority, that being an institution supported in part by public funds. But they didn't try to integrate this new public authority into the existent language, which we would see now as Sections 3A and C. Rather, they tacked on to the end of General Code Section 17-3 the blanket statement: a public authority is also an institution supported in part, and this act applies to public expenditures of those institutions. Now, in 1953, when the revised code replaced the general code, the legislature reallocated and subdivided that language. It was one big paragraph previously. You'll see, though, that the very intent, the language itself, is exactly the same. The present-day version says at the very beginning, for purposes of sections 03 to 16 of this statute, the following shall apply. And then under Section 3A, it says that the institution supported in part is a public authority, and expenditures of public funds by such institutions triggers prevailing wage. Those are the facts in this case. This case is really a very simple case. We have a construction project that was funded from multiple sources of public funding, approximately 50%, but the one that we're focusing on for the court's attention is a community improvement corporation. These are creatures of statute, and Chapter 1724 specifically says the sole purpose for these institutions to be created is to advance, promote the economic, industrial, and civic development of a region. That's certainly a beneficial purpose, and the statute or the code defines institution as any entity, public or private, for-profit or not-for-profit, that exists or was established for any charitable, educational, or other beneficial purpose. We believe that it's without question that advancing economic development is a beneficial purpose. The record is clear that this community improvement corporation was 100% publicly funded, and there's no question then that the expenditure of this institution was public funds, and it triggered prevailing wage applicability.
Counsel, on that regard, should we accord any significance to the fact that the statute says expend public funds by an institution, and in this case it was a loan of funds that the institution is going to get back, so they haven't actually given up anything that they've owned? Is there any significance to that at all?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. There are a multitude of financial transactions that will facilitate construction financing. The loan, the grant, these are highly common and have historically been perceived as an expenditure. I think the exception that I'm aware of on the books is in the form of a tax abatement, where there really isn't some exchange of money. There's the withholding of a collection. That's been deemed not to be an expenditure, but I don't believe the nature of a loan versus a grant has any bearing on the analysis whatsoever.
In public funds, if a bank made a loan to the project, that wouldn't be considered an expenditure by the bank. Would it, the private bank, that'd be considered a loan. But because it's a public entity or public funds involved, you believe that expenditure and loan would essentially equate to the same thing?
I do, Your Honor.
Would that depend on how that loan, the source of the dollars that would pay back that loan?
The money to pay back the loan? I don't know that I understand your question.
Well, if you want to equate taking a loan and then this entity utilizing those dollars for the construction that will bring them under the umbrella of the statute, would it depend on how those dollars were going to be paid back, how the loan was going to be repaid, if they were going to be non-public dollars that were repaying the loan?
In my view, not, Your Honor. And the reason being, it is the pooling of the fund itself that enables the loan for economic development. When it's repaid, it simply replenishes that pot so that it can be used again elsewhere. I do believe part of the incentive of using this approach is that you can get, at the time at least, it was an advantageous interest rate. I don't believe that would be true today. We believe that the Court of Appeals was clearly in error in this case. And interestingly, I think it was concerned, based on argument there, it was concerned with Episcopal Homes, and yet it found that proposition, that Section 3A is an independent trigger for prevailing wage applicability when you're dealing with institutions as distinguished from the state. They didn't have a problem with that. What they concluded is that the regulation at Section 2BB somehow required the expenditure to be on construction and used a very circumscribed terminology of what construction is. I believe if you look at the statute in peri materia, you look at Section 3B, which defines construction, you look at Section 3C, which defines what a construction project is, and you look at Section 3, or I'm sorry, excuse me, .033, which prohibits subdividing projects, what you see is a construction project is the entire undertaking. And construction is a statutory term of art. Is
public improvement under that section, though, is defined to include buildings and roads, alleys and sewers, ditches, waterworks, constructed by a public authority of the state or by a person who, pursuant to a contract, constructs a structure for a public authority of the state.
Yes.
It doesn't talk about a private corporate headquarter renovation.
That's right. That's right. 3C does not apply in this case.
I thought you just argued that it did.
No. No, no. What I was trying to express to you is that construction means the total overall project cost.
You want to include the land in the construction?
If that's part of the project, then the answer is yes. Now, what is a construction project is a very fact-intensive transaction proposition. In this case, the project was a $495,000 undertaking and included purchasing the land, renovating the building, and acquiring certain equipment and machinery to install as part of the renovation.
Didn't Fellauer use its own money to purchase the land?
I believe there was some private funding and there was also county funding for the purchase of the land. We are looking solely at the funding from the Community Improvement Corporation. Grant you, there are probably other ways to project this case and argue whether prevailing wage applies. We chose not to because we didn't want to dwarf the 3A argument under the more comfortable terms of applying 3C in Episcopal Homes. Episcopal Homes doesn't apply to a 3A construction project. So the point being, if you say I'm only spending the public money on the materials, Well, that's not paying a worker for lifting up a hammer, but clearly you can't build anything without materials. The materials are part of the total overall project cost, and therefore by Section 3B constitute construction.
Are you maintaining that Fellauer's construction of its and renovation of its headquarters is a public authority project?
It is a public improvement subject to prevailing wage law. It simply is not a Section 3C public improvement.
You don't think it's a private improvement for them? You think it's a public improvement?
I believe by the operation of Section 3A that it is subject to prevailing wage law.
But it talks about construction of a public improvement.
Section 3C certainly does define public improvement with respect to the state.
But 3A uses the term public improvement, which gets you to 3C.
Section 3A says what a public authority is, and it says with respect
to... One authorized to enter into a contract for the construction of a public improvement.
Right. That piece of Section 3A is referring to the state, the political subdivisions of the state, which are also public authorities. The fact is, as of 1935, there's two categories that are given completely different statutory treatment. The state goes through 3C, the institution does not.
So is the Fellauer improvement public or private?
Well, the Fellauer project is certainly owned by the Fellauer Company, which is a private entity, but because it received public funds from an institution supported in part by public funds to give effect to Section 3A of the statute, it should have been constructed according to prevailing wage law.
Thank you.
Give me your strongest argument why the statute, under the statute, Fellauer is not the institution. Court of Appeals covers both of those issues, as you know, but I'm having a difficult time understanding why Fellauer, for purposes of the statute here, is not the institution, and doesn't and it clearly doesn't meet the test, does it? If it is, if it's the institution rather than OCIC?
If you would permit me, I'll tell you why I don't choose that question is operative, but I will answer it. We want to think like Episcopal Homes. We want construction by and for. So if we look at the person that owns the project and apply the routine of prevailing wage applicability, it makes sense. Looking at an institution like the Community Improvement Corporation that has no stake in the final product other than getting its money back is counterintuitive, but it's exactly the application of 3A that I'm seeking to vindicate. We did look at, and originally as an assignment of error, asserted that Fellauer could be argued to be the institution. We withdrew that because it really wasn't developed below. And frankly, I don't believe that Fellauer would meet the definition of Section 02P, which defines institutions having been established for a beneficial purpose. They were established for profit. So I don't think Fellauer is an institution. But there again, because we don't need ownership by the institution expending the public funds, that shouldn't stop us from looking at anything. Section BB1D, 02BB1D of the regulation, reads exactly the way I'm arguing Section 3A of the statute should apply. Except, again, the Court of Appeals used a very constrictive view of what construction is. With that, I'll reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. D'Angelo. Mr. Attiano.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. And may it please the court. My name is Vincent Attiano. I represent Appellees Ottawa County Improvement Corporation, which I'll refer to as OCIC, and also the Ottawa County Board of Commissioners. I intend to use 10 minutes of the appellee's allotted time to address the appellant's statutory construction argument under Ohio Revised Code Chapter 4115. And I will allow Mr. Alan Ross, counsel for Appellee Fellauer Mechanical Systems, the remaining 5 minutes to address the appellant's argument concerning the purported subdividing of the Fellauer project. This case is essentially an attempt by the Trades Council to expand the reach of the Ohio prevailing wage statute far beyond the express terms of the statute itself. Fundamentally, Ohio Revised Code Chapter 4115 applies to construction projects which qualify as public improvements. However, appellants have conceded that the Fellauer project was not in fact a public improvement. And that's understandable because, as recognized, the project clearly was private in nature. It primarily involved Fellhauer acquiring the land and the building that he leased for his business, his private business, so that he could expand the retail home theater business that he was conducting. Now, although the project included some equipment acquisition as well as some renovation that was financed entirely by private funds, it did not entail any construction by a public authority or for a public authority. And that's what's required for public improvement under Section 4115.03c. That conclusion was made clear by this court's 1991 opinion, written by Chief Justice Moyer in Episcopal Retirement Homes. In that case, the court held that in order for construction to be for a public authority, the public authority must receive the benefit of the construction, either through a possessory interest or a property interest in the project, or, quote, through the use of public funds in the construction of the project, end quote. Although this court found that the project in that case, which involved the upgrading of two nursing homes, provided a public benefit through increased jobs and improved health care, quote, benefiting the public and benefiting the public authority, I'm sorry, a public authority, are separate and distinct functions. Likewise, even though the Fellhauer project was expected to bring jobs to Ottawa County, that was not enough to establish a benefit to either the county or OCIC. Therefore, the trial court properly held that the project was not a public improvement. And on appeal, appellants never appealed that ruling. And in fact, before the Sixth District Court of Appeals, they openly conceded that the Fellhauer project was not, in fact, a public improvement. Moreover, they have relinquished any claim that the project could be deemed a public improvement under another section of the statute, which is 4115.032. That section provides that construction on a project to which certain statutory funding sections apply is deemed to be construction of a public improvement within 4115.03 of the revised code. Now, one of those enumerated sections is Ohio Revised Code Section 166.02, which pertains to the State Economic Development Program. And below, at the trial court level, on a hearing of appellant's application for a TRO, the magistrate ruled that the project might be deemed a public improvement under that section. However, Judge Abood, following trial, correctly ruled that the statute did not apply because the sources of funding involved here did not come from any of the funds specified in Section 166.02. And secondly, these funds, to the extent that there was any, the project, to the extent that there was any renovation, that renovation was devoted to the home theater showroom. And that was a point of final purchase retail facility, and that's expressly excluded from Section 166.02 under Section 166.01D. Now, the appellants did not appeal that ruling either. And they've not argued in their merit brief before this court that the Fellhauer project may be deemed a public improvement under Section 4115.032, either under Chapter 166 or any other provision. Consequently, the appellants are forced to rely entirely on this statutory construction argument with respect to the last clause of the statutory definition of the term public authority in Section 4115.03A. That last clause provides, quote, any institution supported in whole or in part by public funds and said sections apply to expenditures of such institutions made in whole or in part from public funds. Appellants rely exclusively on that last clause to say, well, any expenditures then by an institution using public funds is automatically subject to prevailing wage, even if those monies are spent on something other than construction of a public improvement. In other words, that clause in and of itself eliminates the need for Section 4105.03C, the definition of public improvement. It eliminates it entirely when there's an institution involved and renders it superfluous. But the very language that appellants are pointing to says exactly the opposite. It says said sections, and it's referring, of course, to sections 4115.03 through 4115.16 of the revised code, apply to expenditures of such institutions made in whole or in part from public funds. And that would include 4115.03C, as well as all of the other limitations or exclusions in the statute. Moreover, appellants, we believe, have misconstrued the meaning of this institution clause. Section 4115.03A states that an institution can be supported only in part by public funds, with the rest of the funding made up by private sources like endowments or donations. By noting that the prevailing wage statute applies only to expenditures of such institutions, quote, made in whole or in part from public funds, end quote, the General Assembly was making clear that only expenditures by such institutions, which include public funds, are potentially subject to prevailing wage, if, that is, they meet the other requirements of the statute. Those other terms don't go away. And that, of course, includes the requirement for public improvement. Now, this is confirmed by the regulations, the Department of Commerce regulation at OAC 4101-9-4-02-BB1D, which expressly defines public improvement to include works, quote, constructed in whole or in part from public funds by an institution supported in whole or in part by public funds. Now, conversely, that same statutory language makes clear that expenditures by institutions that consist solely of private funds are not subject to the prevailing wage statute. And that makes perfect sense because, from a policy perspective, because you wouldn't want to create a disincentive for these private funding sources if, for example, the institution, if it ever expended these private funds, would then have to comply with prevailing wage requirements. And under this construction, this clause is completely harmonized with the remainder of the statute, and we don't have to disregard any of it. Now, appellant's explanation that Section 4115.03c's requirement of a public improvement applies only to the public authority of the state or any political subdivision thereof, as opposed to, say, other types of public authorities, like an institution, doesn't make logical sense. If the General Assembly intended different operative provisions to apply to one type of public authority as opposed to the other, why did it lump them all into the same statutory definition of public authority? Moreover, it's clear from the statute itself that when it uses the term public authority, that's merely a shorthand for the more cumbersome public authority of the state or any political thereof.
Mr. Atriano, could I stop you for a second? Because we're really involved in the statute, and I know you're citing us to the sections, but could you please characterize OCIC in terms of the statute? I think that would be helpful. You're talking private public funds. You're talking institution, not institution. How would you characterize OCIC and the amount that was provided to this project?
Yes, Justice Lanziger. OCIC is a community improvement corporation. It's established under Ohio Revised Code, Chapter 1724. Its purposes are set forth in that statute, and namely, it's to promote the economic and industrial, et cetera, development of an area. In our case, the trial court assumed that both Ottawa County and OCIC were public authorities. And so the end result of appellant's argument that OCIC is an institution, all that accomplishes is it would render OCIC a public authority, and that's been presumed all along.
And you don't dispute that?
We don't dispute that.
All yet. Right.
Because at the end of the day, that's not enough, and Episcopal Retirement Homes made that clear. It's not sufficient that you simply have a public authority, because in Episcopal Retirement Homes, of course, Hamilton County was involved. You also need to have the public improvement, which we do not have here.
Did OCIC make an expenditure in this case? Should we equate that with an expenditure under the statute? I know it's not been argued in the briefs, but I am kind of curious about it.
Yes, Justice Cobb. We don't have guidance from the statute itself as to whether or not that would qualify as an expenditure. There's no definition of the term. In our case, whether or not it qualifies as an expenditure, we can simply assume that it does. The other operative requirements of the statute are not met, and therefore it's of no consequence in our particular case. It may be fair to regard it as an expenditure simply because there are other instances, for example, where funding can come within the statute where there is a loan involved.
So your main argument is that there's no public improvement?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
It is a public authority. There's been an expenditure of public funds, but not for a public improvement, instead for a private improvement.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's the essence of the whole issue.
Yes, Your Honor. That is exactly it. Okay. Finally, if I may, I'd like to address the argument that public funding solely of non-construction aspects of a project should trigger prevailing wage requirements. In our situation, I think I've gone beyond my time, Mr. Chief Justice, and I'll yield at this point.
I just noticed the lights here. Yes, thank you, Mr. Atriano. Mr. Ross.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. It is a pleasure and honor to again appear before you on another very important prevailing wage case, as we were here just several months ago on the off-site fabricating. My object today is to address the court with regard to what people refer to as the subdividing issue. We have a statute in Ohio, 4115.033, which says that no public authority shall subdivide a public improvement, again, that critical phrase, a public improvement project into component parts or projects.
If we find that there is no public improvement, does that mean that we don't have to get to the subdivision issue?
That is one answer to the question. There is no public improvement, so therefore, how could there be any subdividing? And again, what we look to determine that is the definition of what a public improvement is. And a public improvement is some construction, and that's a really critical operative phrase here for the second part of the argument, the construction of a public improvement. Well, a public improvement then, as has already been pointed out, is the construction of some structure or works. Somebody read a list of all the different kinds of things, I think you did, of all the things, but essentially those are all structures or what we call works, public works. So since the appellants have conceded that there's no public improvement here, their entire case, therefore, must rest on any time a public authority of any kind or description loans money, well, then it must be prevailing wage. And then to sort of really develop that argument further, they want to say that if a private party obtains a loan to buy land and buildings, even if that loan document says, look, you can only use this money to buy land, building, or equipment, because there may be or there is anticipated to be some construction, you've now subdivided the project. In fact, that's how, and I'll paraphrase Mr. D'Angelo, that's how he phrased the issue before this court, whether construction projects funded in whole or in part by public or with public funds. Well, there was no construction project here funded by public funds. This was a loan from the OCIC to buy land, buildings, and equipment. And as to whether that loan constitutes an expenditure, I suppose what Mr. D'Angelo is also arguing is that the $300,000 that came by way of the Community Development Block grant and the OCIC loan, which was also for land and building, somehow that $300,000, which is not even at issue here, that loan is not the type of loan, not the type of expenditure that's covered by the statute. So what we have here then at the end of the day, and this is in the record, is a loan to purchase land, building, and equipment. It's not part of the construction project, and all of the construction is renovation that is exempted by 166.01D for the renovation of a retail space, which under the statute, under the part of the statute that addresses projects that are deemed to be covered by prevailing wage, even the renovation work is exempt because it's for a retail space, and who was going to do the construction work? The employees of Fellhauer itself.
You need to
it
sum
is
up,
entirely a private project.
You need to sum up.
So what we have here is a loan, which I do not believe is an expenditure. It's a private loan of $36,750 on a $600,000 overall cost of land and acquisition. It's the smallest part of what we're doing here. We have no public improvement as
conceded. That's your summation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. D'Angelo, you saved 2 minutes of your time.
Let me point out again, a project is the entire undertaking. And although I concede we do not have a public improvement as defined by Section 3C, please make no mistake, we have a public improvement for the sake of applying prevailing wage law. It's simply not a 3C public improvement. That's so because the legislature deemed it so. And you will find the 1980 enactment of Section 032, which includes other types of projects that are simply deemed prevailing wage regardless of applicability of Section 3, I think borrows the same mode of communicating prevailing wage applicability as was done in 1935. These are public improvements. This project was 50% paid for by public dollars. The fact that it's privately owned simply means that we're looking at it other than through an Episcopal Homes 3C analysis. And I might point out, of course, in Episcopal Retirement Homes, there was no public money. That was a completely privately funded project.
Counsel, if we should agree with your argument that this is a public project, what relief is being sought here?
Well, the project should, of course, comply with Section 4A at the outset to ensure that as it goes forward, the renovation is in conformity with prevailing wage law. The employees.
This is a project that is underway and not completed yet?
Well, this project, I'm certain, is long.
So what is the relief then?
Well, as a taxpayer suit, which is how this case was brought to court, I believe that we would still, I think, be entitled to request compensation for the attorneys for having advanced the attempt to expose what we believe is an illegal contract. I'd also point out, as Mr. Ross mentions, the land acquisition contract, that document itself, in fact, specifically compels performance under prevailing wage. It says specifically, if it's not a Davis-Bacon compliant project, then it will be constructed pursuant to 4115. Contractor acknowledged at trial that it was bound by that document. Once again, that might be another basis on which we could try to assert prevailing wage applicability, but in our view, the importance of having Section 3A given full effect of the court was more important than looking at a 3C analysis as well.
Thank you, Mr. D'Angelo.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.